Wanna know, won't you take me there? Won't you take me there? Take me back to a place.
Hey, good evening, everyone. You are listening to Spiral Network Talk Radio for everyone who enjoys to challenge the boundaries in which our thinking may sometimes be confined to. And anyone that's listened to the show, you know that we cover subjects ranging anywhere from the very scientific with quantum physics and the science of creating reality and everything for personal development and into the deeper holes of the rabbit hole with, you know, subjects that might really challenge someone that their thinking is pretty much on the straight and narrow. Now, me personally, my favorite subjects are very far left, and that's why I'm so excited tonight for my guest, Suzanne Taylor, who is a girl after my own heart. She's the founder of Mighty Companions. She's a producer, a writer, and a networker, and a, quote, transformational strategist. I love that. She produces projects and events so that self-aware and thinking individuals have opportunities to meet, to engage, and to further the consciousness shift now sweeping through humanity. And, you know, in specific, I want to really get on the subject of this beautiful film that she's made, What on Earth? And it has to do with crop circles. So, you know, without any further ado, I want to get her right on so we can just dive into this subject, which is just one of my favorites. Suzanne, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, you know, Tambourine, if people read your bio, they would want me to be interviewing you, not you to be interviewing me. I mean, you have one trippy bio there. So we should have a pretty good conversation here.
Oh, we're going to have fun. So tell me, Suzanne.
Take me out.
Tell me just, you know, in your own words, just a little bit about your journey and how it landed you in the world of miraculous crop circles. Tell me about that.
Well, really, first of all, I was a very scientifically minded person. If you couldn't put it under a microscope, I didn't think it was real. So I came from a very, you know, objective sort of background. So I want to say that so that when, you know, we talk about this rather trippy subject, that people don't think I'm some kind of woo-woo person. And the only reason that I'm so enamored of them is because the evidence shows that we're not making them. Now, how I got to this place of tuning into the crop circles in the first place, I always thought the world didn't make sense. What was this we were doing? Why were we making war? I mean, it was absurd. It is absurd. I always thought the way we have the world defined just doesn't hang together. And I had childhood experiences of being ostracized for being the only how much of my background, let's see, I was the only Jewish child in the Gentile school system, and I think that implanted me with the idea that being turned on for things I didn't even understand, that people were just kind of crazed in their oppositionality, you know, and then we get, of course, war at the larger level of society, and that no, this didn't make sense. We had to be in some other thought process where we were kind to one another and loved the world and treated it beautifully, whatever. So early on, I just became curious about what could turn this world around, what could give us a different perspective on what was valuable. And so for some time, I've been producing many different kinds of events and programs. When teachers would pass through L.A., they would end up in my living room. I did a lot of salon sort of things. And, you know, L.A. is a crossroads of the world, so the most interesting people come here. And my house got to be known as the place, you know, for the most interesting things to happen. And sometimes outside my house when things were bigger than my – I have a lovely home. And when things were bigger than we could handle here, we would go to outside venues and do them. Well, the crop circles came along just as one subject matter. And when I just accidentally saw photos of them in the late 1980s, and it was suggested that we were not making them, I thought, oh, now there's something that could open people's minds. And I just became curious. So several crop circle researchers passed through town, and I produced very, very successful programs for them. We actually couldn't hold them in my house. They were way too big. The world at that time, in the late 80s, was very curious about crop circles. They were making, you know, newspaper stories about them, and there was a kind of consensus that they were a very mysterious phenomenon. And so that went on until we had this incident that we talk about in my movie where these two guys said they made them all. And I somehow or other, strange but true, as you'll see if you see my movie, these two farmers from nowhere, little farmers from the middle of, you know, farm country in England, made headlines all over the world with a press release that went out all over the world. A press release that two farmers sent out that said they had made all the crop circles. Well,
that's about as stupid as the weather balloon.
Exactly.
Roswell.
Right. The weather balloon that hadn't been invented at that time. Sure. That's what landed at Roswell. Right. Well, exactly. It was a ridiculous story. But interestingly enough, it captivated people's, you know, I think it's because the fact that we weren't making them was so oddball. Come on. How could this be? Oh, people made them. Oh, good. Now we don't have to think about, you know, that anymore. We also talk about that in the movie, because what we're really talking about in the movie is consciousness and how we think and why we think the way we think. And, you know, the challenge that the crop circles present to this entrenchment we have in our worldview. So, and that's why I'm so interested in them. And at some point, I made a vow. I said, you know, if I'm going to do anything with my life that's going to matter, you know, that's going to be different from the nice things that I could be doing, it's going to be to tell the world, the truth about what's going on with these crop circles. And so I have been many years now very dogged about, you know, standing on my soapbox and saying, come on now, pay attention to what's going on. All that we need is attention, but the research has been done. The evidence is in. That's the only reason I'm interested in it, because I see the evidence. I see the fact that we can't do it. So, we can't do it. That means something else is doing it. And if that is the fact, it would change everything. It would be the biggest news to hit humanity ever, that we're not alone. It's not science fiction. It's fact. There's other intelligence engaging with us. Can you just imagine that? Whoa! That would not be today's news that would go away tomorrow. That would be the news, and it would go on, and the whole world would be paying attention to it. And one world. You know, that's...
I'm sorry. I just was going to interject really quick, just in regard to the interesting thing is, you know, when you said that when the two farmers came forward and said, you know, we've made them all, and that made everybody go, oh, okay, well, that explains it. Because the curiosity before that, or the uneasiness, was that question, that unknown. And the unknown has always, from time immemorial, made there be a degree of discomfort within the human being, because that unknown, there's this innate fear of it, although it's the unknown and questioning the unknown that is the catalyst for us to evolve our consciousness in and of itself within the question. And the question in regard to crop circles would be, okay, well, if we're not doing it, then who is doing it? And when you pose that question, whatever you want to call it, divine, God, the universe, whatever it is that the term works best for you, the answer always comes when you pose the question. So,
well,
I, Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point that you made.
Really? Well, all those things you said, yes, I second all those things you said. And if you're not curious, obviously no new information comes in. And if you are curious, worst that happens is, you know, nothing comes in because there isn't anything. But if there is, I mean, we're so shortchanging ourselves by not being open to this. And in fact, the media is really shortchanging itself because they, you know, really don't begin to do a real job of bringing the accurate information to the public. And they're really missing the boat there, too, because if, in fact, this turned out to have been a human perpetration, it's been going on for many years. It goes on every night in England, several occurrences, perhaps in one evening. In fact, there were 36 once in one evening. It's all over the world. What in the world? How could people have been doing this and never been caught? I mean, the media would have itself a fabulous story if it really did turn out to be a people perpetration. How did they pull that off? So, you know, that's what one of the things I talk about on my soapbox, because, you know, the kind of black and white of this world tends to be, well, if they were being made by some other force, wouldn't that be interesting? But since we've decided they aren't, it's not interesting anymore. No, 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 no. That's far too narrow a perspective. So, because I also know that if they did pay attention, what they would discover is that we can't account for them. You know, all you have to do is look at the lab results when they take the stalks of the plants and they take the soil from inside the crop circles into the laboratory, which is where we get our reality. And in the laboratory, they say, oh, my God, this can't be, you know. So all we have to do is pay attention to the evidence, and we are in a different world. But, you know, you were talking, Tambourine, about fear as the resistance. I think it's perhaps more complicated than that. You know, maybe fear is the underlying emotion. But, if everything would change, we would perceive ourselves differently. We would no longer be the big cheese in the universe that lets us be so arrogant. And everyone, even though the status quo is pretty dangerous now and not very we're not doing a good job right now, and people are suffering now, somehow the suffering you're familiar with is less ominous than the one you don't know about. You know.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Even with personal development, it's that way. You know, people that are in abusive type relationships, or even children that come from an abusive home, would rather stay with their abusive parents than go to the unknown.
Exactly. Well, maybe that is fear. Maybe you've got it nailed there. You know, but that's exactly it.
So but this is just my take on it, and let me know what your insight is. But it feels to me that in this recent time, in this fourth quarter, if you will, it seems to me that there is a shift in the tide of thinking, the tide of even the most conservative of people are beginning to ask those questions, where before they were totally the lamb that took whatever was in the trough that was being fed to them. It seems that even the most conditioned people are questioning certain things, like even the thought that the story of the farmers is even being still told is almost ridiculous. You know, that the amount of sightings that are now on a daily basis around the world, I mean, blatant flotillas of ships that mostly happen other than in the United States, because there's a different frequency of consciousness around the world. I mean, these beings, if you will, members of our family that are humanoid, look mostly just like us. You know, that there are obviously other species and DNA type of beings that may look a little different than us and maybe look very different from us, but for the most part, there are beings that look just like us, and they are making their presence known more than ever before. And I think it's going to get increasingly more difficult for the powers that have been to keep that stranglehold on information. You know, that in these next 2 years, from my vantage point, we are really going to see what's really in the pot cooking. We're going to see every ingredient, and we're going to be able to see and choose for ourselves if we want to open our hearts and you know, accept the fact that we are not alone. We've never been alone. And, you know, I feel like we're entering into an era where these beings will be a part of our daily life.
Well, from your lips to God's ear, as they say, may that be true. And maybe it is. We do talk in the movie about a certain sense of escalation where more and more credible people are coming forth to speak about these unbelievable experiences they've had, mostly in that UFO category. And the world is in such trouble that there is a certain looseness now, you know, where there is a search for what's better. And have you been watching, by the way, that series on the History Channel, Ancient Aliens, which is in its second season now?
Well,
you have to watch this. This is a wonderful show. I was on the first season. I was with their crop circle expert. But actually the circles, because they're a kind of more contemporary phenomenon, even though they go back still, the kinds of things they were dealing with were things that go back before when we were supposed to have existed, and yet there is sophisticated evidence or evidence of our sophistication of the human species thousands and thousands of years before presumably we were capable of that. And there's evidence for earlier civilizations. And if you watch this, and evidence, how did we wise up? How did these little creatures here that, you know, were on Earth called humans, how did we get so smart? There, you know, we could talk a long time about all that, but you should watch this Ancient Aliens series. It's on Thursday nights on the History Channel, and I think there's a couple more to go, but then you can go back and get it on iTunes. It's just one of the best things ever, and you can't watch that without saying, oh my gosh, we have been sold a bill of goods. Because, you know, all these things that contradict the history books, you'd have to rewrite the history books. And there's great resistance to doing that. But it's getting to be time when we're going to have to – there's so much contradiction. And it's so available to us. We can find it so easily. It's being delivered to us, to the prevailing story about where we came from, how old we are, what's going on, that, you know – eventually, it's just got to shift over. There's got to be a reorganization of our thought process. And sometimes those things, you know, there's such an accumulation of contradiction to the prevailing worldview that all of a sudden something happens, a trigger event happens, and everything recrystallizes in a new pattern. And we just got to be headed for that unless we do something terrible to ourselves before that. And, of course, that's the danger. And, you know, that impels me somewhat, too. You know, if I could do anything, if I could be really successful at bringing this message forth, I have this feeling I could, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but I could save humanity. I mean, something's going to save humanity or it's not, you know. So well, I know this phenomenon could do that, and I know I'm on it. So,
well, you know, you said something.
Wish me luck, you know.
You said something a minute ago in regard to us changing our thinking process. A shift in our thinking process is key. And in regard
Absolutely.
To that, you know, in regard to shifting our thinking process here as the collective, you know, members of humanity in relation to our family from elsewhere, right? The beings
right.
that are being seen, the beings that are making these crop circles, an example of that in a short little story about the shift in the process of how we think, I think it's more having to do with us making that shift in our thinking as well as our consciousness, raising our frequency up to meet them rather than them having to lower theirs and to meet us. And, you know, the story is, and you may have touched on this, and I may have mentioned it within my bio, but I have had firsthand experiences with beings that people, some people may call aliens, or you know, other peoples may call you know our family from other parts of the universe. But I have had these experiences, and at a time in my life when my consciousness was vibrating pretty closed and pretty low, when I was a Muslim. And followed the teachings of the Nation, which basically, to put it very shortly, they focused on members of the human family with darker melanin that were closer to God, and everyone that you know, was either of the Caucasian race or white was the opposite of that. Now, in my thinking at that time, it was very narrow. So when I had this experience with these beings and they were 8 feet tall and had white blonde hair down to their elbows and electric blue eyes. And when I went on to the ship and, you know, some people were like, okay, she's really lost it, but it's just the truth. And at this point, you know, it doesn't even really matter who believes it or not. But in my experience, when I saw them and they clearly were not dark in melanin and were clearly not just white, but the whitest people I've ever seen, even on Earth. And I remember screaming out loud, no, you're not supposed to look like that. And
oh, how fascinating, really.
You know, and there were males and they didn't speak. It was more telepathy. The one on the left said to the one on the right, she is not ready. And within an instant, I was back in my bed. And it was the next morning. So that's just the insight in terms of how true, in my perspective, your statement is in regard to how important it is for us to make a shift in our thinking process. You know, we need to raise our frequency to know that not one member of humanity is greater or closer to God than any other member of humanity. We all are a fragment of the same whole. And when we get to that and we start really vibrating with that truth, I think we will be raising our frequency higher to meet them where a meeting, not just seeing their messages in the wheat, the crops of wheat, but when they can literally land and know that it will be a peaceful meeting and they can get out and we can have coffee or a glass of wine together and laugh about the damn thing.
Well, who knows? You know, who knows? We really sort of do know that there is much going on beyond this little narrow description that we have of reality. You know, what I see is that if we were acknowledging the fact before we've met anybody, and maybe we never will, but who knows, but before we've met anybody, we can just look at the evidence that the others leave in these crop circles, and then we can calculate and ascertain, oh yes, we are being visited. And then we've got one conversation going on Earth about what's going on, what should we do about it. I mean, is there one thing we can all talk about on Earth with such curiosity and such, you know, a sense of wonder and awe? I mean, wouldn't that be so good for us as humanity? So I think that in itself raises our vibration, because our vibration now is very much attached to this material world in which we're competing with one another, in which whoever gets the most money wins. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. This is a low vibration for a species that is so capable technologically. You know, it's dangerous for us to be thinking this way. So, indeed, I think that the awareness of the other intelligence would in and of itself form a kind of a higher level of awareness in which we would all be operating. I mean, it's almost, you know, a simple little thing. It's just a little click of the mind, and along with everybody else on Earth clicking at the same time and going, whoa, and now we're really in a higher state, you know.
Let me ask you, Suzanne, let's talk about the messages that are imprinted in the wheat field.
Some you know what I'd love to do, Tambourine, before we do that? Uh-huh. Let me give them my website, because people come and go on the air, and I want to make sure they know how to get this DVD of mine. Would that be all right?
Absolutely.
All right. We actually have a special. We have two specials, actually. One special is for your radio listeners, where if they click on this site, they'll get a piece of the bonus material that's on the DVD. It's one of my favorite pieces of bonus material. It's a montage of the circles. And then there's a very, very interesting voiceover. You'll find it when you get on there. And where you go for that is easy to remember, cropcirclemovie.com/radio. It's the slash radio that's going to get you that special. You'll see it right away, and then you can see the trailer for the DVD. So whether you buy it or not, you'll see a couple of really interesting things. And cropcirclemovie.com/radio. But just one more thing to say is that until tomorrow, through tomorrow, now you know, this is mostly for people who've seen the DVD, but we have a Christmas sale going, and we're under wholesale. If you buy two, you get five. So if you have anybody, any listeners who are daring enough to buy a couple of them without having seen it, you will get five of them, and you'll be able to give them to your friends and what have you. So, okay, that's my little story. If we can just say that one more time at the end of the show, then I'll be a happy person. And now you want to know about the messages in the circles, yeah?
Yes, let's talk about those.
Okay. Well, one of the ways we know that other intelligence is contacting us is because of how much is encoded in these formations. They're not just pretty patterns, although the pretty patterns are devised, most of them, or a good proportion of them anyway, from sacred geometry, which is the way the universe is put together, which is kind of why, even though you don't know what is affecting you, you're looking at the fundamental patterning of the universe that's very beautiful, very harmonious. It runs a universe. And so because the geometric circles are designed that way, that really is behind the scenes what's alluring you and what's, you know, enchanting you about the beauty of the patterns. And they are very beautiful. But aside from that, aside from the geometric intelligence that somebody had to figure out, this isn't accidental. It's not casual. Something calculated. What design shall we make? How shall we make it? You know, that's why I think they're coming from embodied creatures and not from some force. People say, oh, it's nature. Yeah, but what I think there's embodied creatures there because it behaves that way. They're designing and then they're placing them very carefully in the landscape. They don't land accidentally. They don't straddle farmers' fields, little family farms over there. And when a crop circle lands, it's inside a field like it's a canvas and the circle is the illustration inside it. And then they land in pointing when they point. At sacred sites all the time, right in the middle of them, you know, things that are not accidental, designed. Well, humans design or creatures design. So, but back to the other encoded information, aside from the geometric information, you know, people ask about the overall story, like, for instance, like it's a jigsaw puzzle and we're trying to figure it out. And when we get the final piece, oh, then we'll understand it. Or like it's hieroglyphics, when we translate the alphabet, we'll know the messages. No, I don't think that's what's going on at all. Individual formations have all sorts of information encoded in them, and people from various disciplines are watching as the circles come in, and the chemist will write in, and the biologist will write in, and the anthropologist, and the philosopher, and the whatever, will write in to a central website where each new formation gets a page, and you'll get on these pages and it'll blow your mind because you don't know. You're just looking at a pattern, but you can't tell that there's all kinds of stuff that the trained eye has picked up that are in these things. We show you one, for instance. There was a formation in 2008 that was the pattern of the solar system, such as it will be in 2012 at that fated date that we're all looking forward to of, you know, something colossal going to happen when the Mayan calendar ends. Well, hello. You look at it. Oh, I see. It's the solar system and there are the planets. I wonder how they're arranged. Oh, that's the sky at the time of, you know, because some astronomer wrote that information in and said, oh, I know that pattern. I see it, you know. So all those kinds of things are just, the formations are full of those kinds of things, specific things in specific formations. And I don't think they're to tell us anything except that to tell us that something out there is recognizing us. They see us. They understand us. They know our formulas. They know our astronomy. They know what we're thinking and they keep giving it back to us so that, you know, I could just picture them out there scratching, as I say in the movie, whatever passes for their heads, wondering, when are these people going to get it? When are they going to get it? We're bombarding them with intelligent information so that they know that there's an intelligent source out here.
Yeah, so and a lot of times what I get from some of the things that I've seen are clues that they're are giving. Because, you know, if they're evolved beings, they understand that no one can do it for you. It's something, evolution is something that is a lone journey that has to be realized within each self. So the clues are about the best that they can do without impressing their will for our evolution on us. And some of the clues being patterns of what looks like a pine cone, which in ancient civilization up until now, in many what you would call secret societies, the pine cone symbolizes the pineal gland, which is a key in the connection between our world here in this reality and every other reality that is beyond this one, that is right embodied within our own physical body, that we have not been educated about how to turn that on to evolve ourselves into the higher versions of ourselves, or the patterns of DNA. What is the clue there about our DNA and the fact that there are 12 spirals within that pattern of DNA? What does that mean? What is that, hinting at? All of these things, I believe, are clues to gear us to ask those questions of that unknown, to ask, well, what does that mean for my daily life? Those are not just pretty patterns, but what message are they trying to point at, to hint at about where we're going as a human family? You know, the difference between the Cro-Magnon and us is about the difference between us and this other version of humanity that I believe is coming in this next new era past that date, that flag post date of 2012.
Well, I love what you said about their clues. What is implicit in what you said is it's the answer to why don't they land on the White House lawn? Because if they did that, it would be very invasive. They would be forcing themselves on us. But rather, they're leaving clues so that as we examine them and puzzle over them, we go, oh, something is sending us messages. And then we figured it out. We got it. It was us that gave it to ourselves instead of something being forced upon us, which does not seem harmonious for an enlightened sort of other intelligence to be doing with us. That would not be nowhere near as effective as them dropping hints and clues and us perceiving them and understanding them and going, oh, yes, I got it. Once you got it, you got it, you know, and you got it by yourself, which is really, I think, the harmonious way of the evolutionary process.
Yeah, totally, because it inspires us to ask questions that then inspire other things to drop into our daily reality that then pose other questions that, you know, inspire us to yet broaden our reality a little further and investigate and then, you know, get information that takes us to another level and another level, all hinting to the fact that we are so much more than we ever have been taught that we are, so much more than we've ever believed that we are, you know, that we really, truly are no different than those who are contacting us, that we have the potential right within our own selves, our own bodies, to evolve to that point of enlightened humanity. I believe that is our very near future, and I'm very excited about that.
Well, I think that's a beautiful articulation, really. Just what you said, I think, is really absolutely beautiful. We all know that we're operating, in some diminishment of what our potential is. And you can just really feel the shift that would happen if we opened ourselves beyond this little narrow lens that we have and we were really, you know, expanded to where we really were relating to this otherness. You can just feel it. You can just feel the rise and the, you know, the greater power we would be entertaining. There's such a good payoff if this thing all turns out to be, what it seems to be, it's so frustrating to deal with a world that, mocks it and makes fun of it and doesn't pay attention to it and whatever. Oh my, you know, can't get on Oprah. You know, come on, Oprah. This is a good topic. Really? I mean, really. We need a champion, by the way. You know, one thing that I think is really odd about this phenomenon, given the world we live in, it's so interesting and fascinating and, you know, unusual, you would think that there would be some celebrities that would have become interested in it, because that's a tremendously valuable way that the public learns about things. When a celebrity is interested in something, you find out about it. We have no celebrities. I can't believe it. Why is this? Why don't we have celebrities that have, taken a shine to these things? So come on, Oprah.
I think, bless their hearts, because they've chosen a life that is very much controlled by the powers that be in this culture. You were mentioning about the news and, why you don't ever really see these subjects on the news is because, for everyone that doesn't know, most of the news stations, they're all pretty much owned by the same people. And that's why, especially in the United States, the news is very filtered. If you were to ever, in this day and age, it's easier to access news from around the world. And you'll see, don't take my word for it, investigate it yourself and see just how different the information that is freely divvied out around the other parts of the world compared to our news. And, the ones who are famous always originate here. Hollywood, the movies, music, all of that. They are very much controlled with a tight grip. So, I understand that it's not really their responsibility to champion that, because, this is the thing, is that one of the aspects of evolving is that we stop looking outside of ourselves for a champion, that we must find the champion within ourselves. We must be driven and inspired to find the answers to those questions for ourselves. And with that, the whole universe of knowledge and information is at our feet. If we have the courage to take that self-responsibility, on ourselves,
Well, we all have to do that, of course. We always have to keep opening our own minds. I mean, that's primary, no matter what. When I think about the circles changing consciousness, I don't mean that you don't keep on in this personal quest. It will change mass consciousness. It will change our idea of who we are collectively, that we're a species that isn't the only intelligence in the universe, but in terms of all of the real personal power that we can have access to, and the personal intelligence and consciousness that is dormant within us. Oh, that's the work of all of our lifetimes for sure.
Oh yeah, I think that we're moving into an era. I can't see it past another year or two. It being business as usual. I think as the consciousness of the world shifts and raises in vibration, that it will be the order of the day. That this knowledge is common knowledge, and we will look back at these quote dark ages as just being, a time in our history that will never be repeated again, because, once knowledge and information, and consequently the definition of light, is information. That's what light is. It is matter. It is information, riding on waves. So this is a light era that is coming in, where all information will be known. And the people that, we might still have famous people in that era. And they, they will probably represent what the era is about, which is, talking about these things as if it's no big deal, because it just is what it is. It won't be something that, we have to, go in the cellar and talk about, lest we fear retribution from those who, are insisting upon a dark age.
Right. Well, they're not burning us at the stake anymore, thank God.
Thank God. I've died really many times that way. It's really a bore.
Really, really. But it does feel like, there is a kind of quickening. There is an escalation. It feels like something's going to shift. Something's going to pop. And indeed, You look back, and it wasn't all that long ago that, we had slavery, and it wasn't all that long ago before women's lib. That changed the world. And I'm thinking, well, it's ripe for another change. We've just got to get out of this focus on this materialistic, selfish, violent world that we're just spoiling the, you know, spoiling the world for paradise, you know. Thank God for Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Ted Turner lately, who are at least making statements about the inordinately wealthy turning around and divesting themselves of this incredible excess wealth. I mean, how horrible that, you know, half the world is starving and people are sitting with billions of dollars. I mean, really? What do you do with billions of dollars except count it, you know?
Right. So, you know, that is, you just said something very poignant, because those people that you just mentioned are, in fact, because of their wealth, some of the most powerful people in the world that do know a thing or two about what is at hand. So they're probably making a very wise choice in their own self-interest, because they know that that world is over with. They don't have, you know, a whole lot of time in regard to that. So they might as well do something that is going in the way of how things are going.
If the world falls apart, all the rich people are going to go down too. So it definitely is in their self. And I think you're definitely on to something there. So may they lead the way, and we sure can use that kind of thinking of, you know, I mean, even then they're still stinky rich at the end of it all. It's not they're going to suffer. So they're good examples for so many other people in the world. That would go such a long way if all of the really massively wealthy people. I was thinking about this tax cut thing. Okay, the rich people didn't get tax cut. Well, you know, there was a whole movement among many of the wealthy people. It was on the net of asking them to give, you know, to cut their taxes. And I was thinking when it didn't happen, I'm thinking, well, you know, they could just give the money anyway. I mean, why, you know, if you're so eager to circumvent this ridiculous tax situation, well, just give it out. Give it to charities, you know. Be very, very inordinately charitable. A lot of wealthy people are very charitable, but they could be even more charitable. So, you know, all those people that protested, the rich people that processed the tax cut, well, let them turn around and give it anyway, you know. So, my two cents. Really.
You know, I remember reading about the Pleiadian Society. For those that aren't familiar with the Pleiadian star system, it's a grouping, seven planets, and they call it the Seven Sisters, actually. But the information that I read about it, they talked about their societies and what their societies are built on, and some very wise ideas. You know, they take the people who are inclined to certain trades, you know, those that are born with the gifts and talents of, say, tending the land, or those who are, you know, into the culture of art and music, and, you know, the list goes on of what comprises a successful culture, and they let those people run those areas.
Government almost, kind of control.
Yeah, exactly. It's like those that are inclined to those areas, they have an inner responsibility for that, and they do it out of the love of their heart for their fellow man and fellow woman. And, you know, there is no theft, there is no murder, because they understand that what they do to someone else, they do to themselves. They truly see everyone as an extension of themselves. So, you know,
perfect.
There's no money system. You know, everyone, it's a very balanced, you know, and if you were to say that to someone who is in the capitalistic state of mind, they'd be like, well, how would that work? How, you know, that there's no way that could work, but it really can. And again, something I mentioned in the beginning of the show, if we challenge the boundaries of what our thinking has been confined to, we could open ourselves up to how many different potentials there are for a race of beings to co-create a civilization that is in harmony with nature, in harmony with each other. And with that, all problems can be solved, you know, a very peaceful, people are the Pleiadians, you know, very playful and very joyful beings. And consequently, those are the beings that look just like us.
Well, as you were describing that, I could absolutely see it, even though you say, oh, come on, now that's ridiculous. That's so idealistic. Well, wait a minute. Just think about your own family. Think about your kids. You know, you're not in competition with your kids. You want to take care of them. You want everything to be good for them. And if everybody had that attitude about humanity at large, you know, we could make it a successful world. We don't lack for the resources. We lack for the will to apportion them properly and to take care of everything. It just, you know, we really are so primitive in how we let people suffer and how, you know, the comfortable people can turn their back on a world in pain. And again, you know, war just to me is like, oh, it's such a signal of a really inferior, you know, primitive kind of mentality. I mean, killing each other and then, you know, legally killing each other, and then people come back to society and, oh, we can't do that. And it's just totally unthinkable, you know.
I totally hear you in regard to that. And, you know, although all of that pain and suffering, you know, has been an instrument, because the soul uses that pain and suffering individually and collectively to learn the lessons that it came to learn. But thankfully, I am glad that we are shifting into a new body of curriculum. You know, that is truly what I believe from inside my bones. And with that, we are running out of time, Suzanne. So while we have a minute left, I would like you, please, share with our listeners anything that you feel that you'd like to share for them to get a hold of you, or, you know, what you've got going on.
Okay. I feel like we should talk about crop circles now. We've been talking about everything else. Okay. So listen, you guys, this is a fabulous DVD. People are just beside themselves with loving this movie of mine. So you get it on cropcirclemovie.com/radio, where you will see, without buying anything, one of the beautiful pieces of bonus material. We have the film and an hour of bonus material on this DVD. And if you act by tomorrow, you can buy two and get five. I mean, it's the biggest bargain ever. It's below wholesale. But one other thing I wanted to say is I do a blog, and everybody loves being on my mailing list, theconversation.org, another easy one to remember, theconversation.org. Where you can see all the blog entries and you can get on the mailing list. It's low volume. I don't send out a lot. I just send out compilations of blog entries every couple of weeks. That's about it. But it's some of the most interesting thing you would ever read about thinking outside the box. So those are my two encouragements, cropcirclemovie.com/radio and theconversation.org.
Oh, Suzanne, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And it's been a very engaging conversation. I've loved spending this time with you. And I hope you come back and visit us sometime soon.
Love to, honey. I feel like I'm talking to myself, so I'd love to do it.
Precious. Well, you have a beautiful holiday. And everyone that's listening, have a precious Christmas or whatever it is that you do celebrate. And we'll see you back here week after next. Thanks for spending an hour with us. Have a good night.
Wanna know, won't you take me there? I wanna go far down the rabbit hole. Won't you take me there? Take me back to the place where I never die and never cry. And never again
the sky, I scan to the left, and you open your eyes. I wanna know.
To the lake.